dear, very sad. Steve has gone, and we're left with the rest of the run to 1,000 shows on our own, Joe. Hello, Joe.
How you doing? Yeah, Steve's not quite gone. We'll get him back on at some point.
he's vowed to come on to our Christmas show in December, so yes, we should certainly have him on. But on the first show proper, it's 867, and it's the beginning of September, the 1st of September, in fact. We've roped in Malcolm Bryant. Thank you, Malcolm, for offering to be on the first New Look show. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's... It's exciting to be in on the relaunch. I think you guys are going to be great. Really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, we've had a little bit of a reshuffle about the way in which this whole thing works. If you want to be a guest on the show, then do give us a shout and let us know that, and we'll put you into a slot. At the moment, we've got a show every 2 weeks, every second Monday, which means obviously two a month. The guest slots for the next 3 months are actually pretty much full for those. But Joe and I are prepared, if needed, to stick one in the middle of the fortnightly ones and do one in the middle of the week if we need to catch up or anything. So we'll play it by ear and we'll see how we go. But initially, certainly, for the first 3 months, officially, it's going to be every fortnight. So we'll see how we go with that. Phoneshowchat.uk is our new website. And you'll find the RSS feed there if you can't get it anywhere else. If you want to get your podcatcher up to speed, you need to put in either Phone Show Chat or Ted Salmon or Joe Hickey, and you will find that they will search on those terms and they'll find the New Look one. The icon is very similar to the old one, except that at the bottom, towards the bottom, it says Ted and Joe in amongst the phones in the graphic. So just be careful with that. Might be easiest to try and unsubscribe to the old one at this stage. So yeah, if you get lost, then you can head for tedsalmon.com and we'll go from there. So, Joe, you've been at a phone launch this week, and I'm hoping to come to that with you very soon. But initially, one of the big changes is that I think that it would be better if we launch straight into the guests' gala, as we're going to call it, and what give the lead to the guests, really, the person that's not banging on every fortnight like me and you, Joe. So I hope that's okay with everyone. And
yeah,
with you, Malcolm. You've got lots of stuff to bring, and that's really good. We have a nice chat ahead of us. Do you want to introduce yourself to anyone that doesn't know who you are and then launch into your stuff?
Sure, yes. Yeah. So Malcolm Bryant, I hang around the MeWe community. I've been on the podcast a handful of times before, so you may have heard me before, but as I said, delighted to be on again. And I think guest gala, I like that. I think that's a good title. We should stick with that.
Excellent.
I wanted to lead off, I guess, with some fairly big news, really, in the Android world. Which is that new sideloading restrictions for Android are coming in next year.
Boo.
And Kurt Kaufman made a MeWe post on this subject a few days ago, but I thought it was worth bringing up because for Android geeks in particular, this is a pretty big deal. And I guess just to introduce it, to set the scene, if I buy a Windows computer, I can develop, install, and run a program on that computer, and I don't have to register with Microsoft first. If it's a cool program, I can put it on my website, and other people can download it and use it on their computers. And again, I don't have to get permission from Microsoft or register my program with Microsoft to do that. I don't even need to have a Microsoft account. And up to now, Android has been similar to that. So I can develop an app and run it on my phone. If it's a cool app, I can put it on my website and people can download it and use it on their phones. And sure, if I want to make money or reach a large audience, I can put my app on the Play Store. But if I'm just an indie developer and not worried about the Play Store, I can do my own thing and don't need Google's permission to do anything. But that's all changing next year. So from next year, anyone who wants to publish an app whether it's on the Play Store or not, must submit proof of identity documents to Google. And each app, even if it's not on the Play Store, must be registered with Google, otherwise it can't be installed on your phone. And so indie devs who use the alternative non-Play Store registration process, they'll also be limited in the number of apps and the number of installations that they can have. So this is, like I said, a pretty big change, and it's fair to say that it's caused much consternation in the developer community. And the reason is that firstly, devs don't like the requirement to provide a passport or a driving license to Google, especially when they're not even distributing apps via the Play Store. And devs don't like registering non-Play Store apps with Google. So, if I'm not putting my app on the Play Store, why do I have to let Google know what I'm doing? And devs worry that Google could unilaterally revoke an app they don't like. So in other words, remove it from the kind of registered app whitelist. Or even worse, they could revoke the developer's credentials. And you may not be aware of it, but there are a fair number of precedents for that happening on the Play Store. And if you're a developer and Google revoke your credentials, not only are you banned from the Play Store, but you can't even distribute apps via your own website from next year. So you're basically stuffed. So going forward, each app is going to be uniquely identified with one developer. And so I don't know if our listeners are familiar with open source repositories like FDroid, which re-sign apps with their own developer key. So a lot of people go to FDroid because it's all open source, it's all indie stuff, and as kind of proof of ownership, they re-sign all the apps. That's no longer going to work. That's going to be blocked. And people who use modified apps, like there's something called Revance that provides, ad-blocked YouTube, that's no longer going to be possible. And it's not even clear, if I write my own app for my sole use, it's not even clear if I'll be able to install it on my own device unless I first register that app with Google. So just think about that for a minute. It's like I write my own app for my own device and I have to get Google's permission.
Because you're using their software.
Because they've said that every app, even apps that are that bypass the Play Store, have to be uniquely identified with a developer key with them.
Because you're using their software, because you're using Android, and they are controlling Android.
Correct.
What about the implications? I know you're in the middle of your flow there, but what about the implications for ROM, custom ROMs and all that sort of thing? And also the Samsung store comes to mind as well. But sorry, I interrupted your hit list.
No, the custom ROMs. It's not completely clear. At least it's not completely clear to me. This is new news. It was only made public within the last week. And so there are still a lot of things that haven't been clarified. So I don't exactly know what's going on with custom ROMs. With big companies like Samsung and the others, no doubt they'll have, separate arrangements that will work for them. It's really that the kind of noise around this is really from people like me, kind of, indie and hobbyist developers, right, who are finding it increasingly difficult to actually release apps, in the Google ecosystem.
So, at the moment, are you allowed to register your app with the Samsung store? Or is that something that is not open to you at the moment? Because if that is open to you at the moment, presumably you could then just switch to that instead.
I haven't looked into it. I mean, right. I think there are certain entry criteria for the Samsung store as well. And I don't frankly know what they are. But I'll come on to kind of alternative app stores in a moment. No, but it's a great question you're asking. But I think the reaction of a lot of developers is saying, you know, there are already so many hurdles to sideloading apps. So if any of our listeners have tried it, you know, it'll come up and say unknown sources are blocked, and it'll give you a scary warning. You know, are you sure you want to install this app? You know, all kinds of bad things can happen. So many devs are really questioning why this extra enforcement's needed. So as I said a moment ago, you know, there's a lot of consternation about this in the developer community, and it's a pretty significant change, because it's the first time since, you know, Google started in whenever it was, 2007 or 2008, that this kind of freedom to publish at will is being modified so much.
Or rather, when Android started, you mean?
When Android started, yes.
Yeah, does it feel to you as though this is Google just doing what Apple are doing and just closing in the walled garden and making sure? I that might be completely unfair, because I don't know anything about Apple and how they do their stuff, but does it feel a bit like that or not?
It does, yeah. You know, so a lot of developers are saying Google is becoming Apple, actually, as you put in the show notes. And it feels like it's heading in that direction. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, sideloading is still going to be technically possible, but you know, the barriers are escalating all the time, so it's getting less and less attractive for developers to go that route. And you know, it's so we'll have to wait and see how it shakes out. But it's pretty big news, actually, which is why I thought it was worthy of a mention.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's a bit worrying, really. It's going to discourage people to develop apps, which is what we want people to do.
Yes, yeah. But particularly if you think back to the early days, it was very much almost a Symbian-like environment where devs would play around with things and they publish them. And now it feels increasingly like you have to be a big company in order to really, you know, have a viable product. You're just getting harder and harder for the small guy, really.
It's all about control and money.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But they would argue it's about security as well, because, you know, in an Apple type way, and you know, to be fair, if you're an Apple user, you can feel very reassured that whatever you do to your phone, presumably with their app store, is completely safe, and no one's going to trip you up, and you know they've been able to enjoy those security measures since day one. And you know, they could argue, Google could argue, well, that's what we want our users to feel like as well.
Yeah.
I think more recently, though, Google phones have been rated slightly safer with their Titan 2 chip and all that stuff than iPhones.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with each iteration of Android, they're tightening up, you know, the security. And I'm sure that's because they get your bad publicity saying, you know, exactly what you just said. You know, Apple is secure, Google is not secure. That's been the received wisdom. But yeah, it's just a very different. The way forward looks very different from what we've had in the past, I guess.
So yeah, app stores. Then I just mentioned the Galaxy store, but what I didn't think about when I mentioned it just now is that, of course, that's only for Samsung. So if you did get your app into Samsung's Galaxy store, that's great, but it's only going to be Samsung users that could use it, isn't it?
I think that's true. That it's restricted to Galaxy devices. I mean the whole topic of alternative app stores is also very topical and newsworthy, because, as our listeners may know, there's been a recent court ruling that's forcing both Google and Apple to allow third-party app stores to be installed in their respective app stores. So in particular, the EU is trying to loosen the stranglehold that Apple and Google have on being the sole distributors of apps in their respective ecosystems, because they've said it's not fair. You know, you're stopping other, you know, Epic Games is the corporation that sued Apple and Google and had that win in the courts. Yeah. That they should be allowed to have an app store, and that app store shouldn't be disadvantaged against the Play Store and the Apple App Store. So in, you know, if this plays out and actually there are more options in terms of alternative app stores, in theory there should be less friction for users who want to explore, you know, alternative avenues to get their apps, notwithstanding what we just said about the side loading changes. So, you know, I kind of wondered what you guys felt about, you know, would you be willing to go to another app store and to get your apps, or would you be hesitant about that, or you know, what do you think?
I think that I don't remember ever using an alternative app store. I might have done when I was messing about in the early days, you know, just post Symbian, I suppose, with some of those early devices that we were playing around with. And also when I had a Amazon Fire device, I think I might have been before you could actually properly unlock the Play Store on them. I think I might have been doing some of it then. But frankly, it's just not really something that I've ever felt the need to do. We've said on the show before that most people tend to get their set of, I don't know, 20 apps, and that's what they use. And it's got to be something really special that comes along to change that mentality. I don't know. Joe?
Yeah, my thoughts are the same, really. The only alternative I've really used is the Galaxy Store. Although, I think I've used APK Pure before, which we'll get onto later. Yeah, I don't recall using any other stores, to be honest. I'm so baked into Google.
I'm sure that's true of 99% of users, right? People, if people want Google apps, they go to the Play Store. If they want Apple apps, they go to the Apple App Store. And that's all there is to it. So this kind of experiment by the EU to try to break that down and add more choice, you know, hard to know if that's going to go anywhere, really, because people are so set in their ways. Interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, for Android side loading, I've kind of, you've gone on at length about that, but it's only probably a very small proportion of kind of nerdy techie people who really ever, you know, sideload apps in Android. But those guys are pretty passionate about it, and they're pretty vocal about wanting to keep that functionality or that ability.
Just quickly, I wonder how this affects like a business, because like, people make apps specifically for their business. They don't get them onto the Play Store usually, do they? So it's going to affect that, I assume.
Yeah, so I think that's a great point. Companies that have company apps that have been developed, you know, bespoke to their needs, that never appear on the Play Store, those apps are still going to need, as my understanding is, those apps will still need to be registered with Google, but just not on the Play Store. So Google will still need to know about them and basically give a key that enables those apps to be installed on devices. So that's another change. Again, not completely clear, but that's the way it's looking.
You said that you can still sideload stuff, and you can register your application, you can do all that. You moved on in the notes here into you asked Gemini about how that could work for you.
Well, I have my own mini app store at Freepok, which is just a list of all of the apps I've published, of which there are, I don't know, 50 or so, and for phones and watches. And if anybody wants an easy way to install those, I have what I call a Freepok downloader. They can install that, and then they can get all my apps easily. Mm-hmm. So when this EU ruling came along, I thought, oh, that's interesting, because Google has always said you can't have a competing app store hosted on the Play Store. So there was no possibility for me to take my Freepok app store and put it on the Play Store, mm-hmm. Because it was against Google policy. So I said to Gemini, this policy is changing. Do you think I could bring my mini app store onto the Play Store? And she ummed and ahed about it. And then she came back with about a dozen reasons why that would be really, really difficult to do, not least that in her opinion, I'd have to set up a registered business to do it, which is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I'm going to go down that route. But the implications for me personally are that some of my apps are on the Play Store, they won't change, but the apps that I distribute not on the Play Store, I'm going to still have to go to Google in future to register those apps, which I've mm-hmm. not had to do in the past. So it mm-hmm. will affect me personally.
And how much work is that?
It's going to be a bunch of work to kind of catch up. So all the ones that I haven't done yet, I haven't registered yet, I'm going to have to do them in bulk. So that's going to take me probably a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then if I develop a new app, I'll have to register that to Google, irrespective of how I distribute it. So there'll be a bit of incremental work to that as well.
And you wonder how big the team is that's going to be looking through these apps, all these applications from all the developers.
Yeah.
Could be a huge backlog.
It'll be a robot.
Yeah, probably.
It could well be a bot that does it, or they could selectively review some apps, or I don't know. Not clear. But anyway, that's the big news of the last week or so in Android developer land.
Be interesting to see what happens, won't it? Particularly as we have got someone in our group, i.e. you, you'll be on the nub end of exactly what's going on, and we'll get a first-hand report from you. So I'm sure that all the people listening to this will be interested in that. And of course, there's the MeWe group. For those that haven't joined the MeWe group, there are links in the show notes to that and also at tedsalmon.com. So make sure you join up with our PSC MeWe group, particularly to keep track of what Malcolm is telling us about all this stuff, which is really interesting. It's very small, though, as you said, Malcolm. You know, the people that are going to be, I don't know if you've got statistics about how many downloads you've got, but, you know, it's not going to be huge numbers like, a big corporation app that's on the App Store and like Twitter or whatever. Well, no, it's not Twitter, it's X.
It's a different order of magnitude for sure.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll keep people posted.
Yeah.
And that'd be great. Thanks very much. Okay, what's next?
So the next thing was I put in the show notes, our phones need an I know what I'm doing mode. And if any of our listeners with Androids have a few spare minutes, just as a curiosity, they might want to put the following into Google. If you search for delayed notifications, Doze, Reddit, then you'll get a whole host of results about notifications that have been delayed because of this thing called Doze mode. And you can read comments from people who talk about notifications arriving late on their phones. It seems to vary by manufacturer and for different apps. Some people claim not to have a problem. Other people are really frustrated by notifications that seem to constantly arrive late. And so I thought, you know, I might spend a little bit on talking about why this happens and what I would ideally like to do about it. And it goes something like this. If you don't interact with your phone for some period of time, I'm talking specifically Android here. If you don't interact with your phone for some period of time, the processor effectively goes to sleep. And while the processor is sleeping, background processes don't run. And this is something that Google calls Doze mode. Mm-hmm. Now, that's all well and good, but suppose that your phone is sleeping because you haven't used it for a while and you get an urgent message come in. As a user, you want to be alerted to that urgent message, even if your phone is sleeping. So to handle this situation, Google designates incoming messages either as high priority or as normal priority. So a high priority message includes, let's say, SMS or RCS, WhatsApp, and other apps on your phone. Those are designated as high priority and will wake the phone up, are supposed to wake the phone up when you receive those messages.
Mm-hmm.
In normal circumstances, they shouldn't be delayed.
Because they would all be nominated high priority.
Correct.
Yep, okay.
Now, the situation for Gmail messages is more nuanced than that. So obviously a lot of people, Gmail has billions of users around the world, and people depend on it to run their businesses and so on. And Google has an algorithm that decides whether a Gmail message that you receive is high priority or normal priority. And how that algorithm works isn't documented, and the user can't control it. And I think the reason it's not documented is that Google doesn't want people gaming it, right? So if they said, you need to include these keywords and then your message will be high priority, mm-hmm. All the spammers would start including those, right? Yeah. It would mess everything up. So mm-hmm. Google don't publish how the algorithm works, but behind the scenes, every message that you get into Gmail, Google decides, is it high priority or not? If it's high priority, it will wake the phone. If it's normal priority, it won't wake the phone and it will be delayed. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me, but I understand what they're doing. And it's trying to use AI basically to monitor your inbox and see if it thinks that it's just all AI stuff, isn't it? As you say, the algorithm is deciding for you. You can't control it. You can't. Hopefully it would say, work out that if my dad sent me an email, for example, that would just be the algorithm would work out that that was high priority and that needs to come through. Whereas if it's Giacomo clothing, then it would decide that that's low priority and it doesn't come through. You would hope that it would do that, but I can't, it's not going to, is it?
So I think that's the essence of how it's supposed to work, the way you described it. But based on all of these people, all the feedback in all the forums that says, I'm not getting my Gmail messages, they're being delayed, what can I do about it, indicates that people are very frustrated by the fact that their phones are deciding what's urgent and what's not, rather than they themselves.
Mm.
And, what I've explained so far is a bit of an oversimplification. There are some other factors that can affect message and notifications. And it isn't actually just about notifications and messages. So I've put in the show notes here, it's background jobs are also severely restricted in those modes. So if an app needs to run a background job, let's say every 5 minutes, then...
What's the background job?
A background job is a background process. So a job that kicks off a background process on your phone. So anything that's designed to run on your phone without you noticing.
Okay. GPS or something.
Yeah. Or
just, location tracking.
Something like that, for example. Yeah. Okay. So if you have Doze mode enabled, as phones do by default, instead of running those jobs when they're supposed to run, i.e. in my example, every 5 minutes, Google decides to run it only once in the first hour, and then only once in the next 2 hours, and only once in the next 4 hours after that, rather than every 5 minutes, to save battery. So it makes that decision. It says this background job that this developer, this app wants to run is not important enough. I'm going to just stop it from running, except in very limited windows.
Okay.
Okay. That's what Doze does. If you were to disable Doze, the job would run every 5 minutes when it's intended to, when it's designed to.
Sod the battery.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah, and sod the battery.
And sod the battery.
Yeah.
So I mean, why am I saying all this? I'm saying it because the question really is, do we need all... So everything I've spent the last 5 minutes talking about, do we really need all this complicated logic and the associated delays and things for the sake of saving a bit of battery? So, you know, batteries are much bigger nowadays. And on my devices, I don't know about you guys, but I hardly ever run low at the end of the day. I've always got plenty of battery left.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I would like to make the choice between things running on time and messages coming through on time or not. I'd like that to be my choice rather than Google's choice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the theme definitely. Of the day at the moment is Google taking away our choices.
that's my kind of rant, I guess, that I'm ranting about. So
just to step back for a second, Malcolm, I would say that I've been using a Honor phone at the moment quite readily, and I have noticed that the notifications or processes or whatever, it just seems to be really good. And yet, I think that you said somewhere along the line that the Chinese phones tend to be not so good at that, but I found that the Honor system seems to work right. As you know, Joe, you're an Honor guru or something, or what are you called? An Honor what?
Honor hero, yeah.
Hero. What do you think? Do you think that Honor are better at this?
They are. They do seem pretty good, actually. I think Xiaomi are renowned for being quite slow.
Right.
I think they're the main culprit, actually, that gives Chinese devices that image, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's right.
I think Honor is just so much better than Pixel, though. I quite often, because of what I do here, I quite often have 2, 3, 4 phones lined up together, and Honor is the P400 is the first one that gets it every single time. And I don't know. Any thoughts, Malcolm?
Yeah, you know, I think it is different manufacturers and different devices work differently, and that's. Again, if you're a user, that's kind of bewildering, right? You know, you just want things to be consistent, and yet one device works differently from another. And why isn't there just a toggle that I can go into and say, just turn all that stuff off?
Yeah.
Just, you know, just give me my device and let things run when they're supposed to, and just make that an easy toggle. But Google doesn't allow us to do that. It's kind of decided that this is the way things need to work, and you know, I don't really have any choice in it.
Yeah,
because I read that it used to be able to disable it in developer settings, but they removed that, which is surely developers wouldn't want that on all the time, would they?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really hacky way to disable it, and actually, I did a post in the forum to show how to do it, but it's a hack, it's a workaround. It's not like a nice switch in settings. You can just say, I want this stuff, or I don't want it. And you know, I guess last thing on my kind of rant, mini rant on this. I don't know if again, you know, or our listeners will know that Android will put your apps to sleep if you don't interact with them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So periodically, I've got a Samsung S25 as my main device, and it will pop up a message saying, you haven't used these apps for a while. They'll be put into a deep sleep. They won't send you notifications. They won't receive updates, and they may not work correctly. And I've put in the show notes, I put a screenshot of that exact screen that comes up on my Samsung every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's kind of, it's bizarre, right? So what a bizarre thing. Why would I want my phone to stop some apps from working correctly? Why? Of course I don't want to do that. You know, if the apps are on my phone, I want them to work you know, that's why I installed them in the first place.
Is it to do with controlling data? Not just battery, but controlling data flows, security?
I think it's that Google is trying to say to the user, if you haven't used this app for, you know, a month or 2 months or whatever the period is, mm-hmm. chances are, you know, you're not really interested in this app. So I'll do you a favor. I'll just kind of completely close it down so it doesn't work anymore.
Mm.
And maybe 99% of our users want that. But I'll give you an example of where that can be really, really frustrating. So for example, I have Telegram installed on my phone, but I don't use it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm signed up to it, but I don't regularly use it for my messaging. But I have some friends who do, and periodically they send me a Telegram message. Now, because I don't use Telegram myself to initiate messages, I can go for, you know, a month or a couple of months without ever opening the app. And so if I don't do anything, my S25 will remove Telegram's notification permission because I haven't used it for a while. Right? They'll just take it away. They'll just say, okay, Telegram can't send you notifications anymore. And so if somebody sends me, if one of these people, my friends on Telegram, they send me a message, I have no way of knowing I've received it because I don't get a notification and I don't check the app.
And also uninstalling is next, Marco.
Well, maybe. But you know, it's I find that super frustrating. Super frustrating. So you know, to be fair, when my phone says to me, I'm going to put some apps to sleep, it does come up with a list of them. And if I'm on the ball, I can go in and say, oh, actually, I don't want that one to be put into a sleep, and I can exclude it. I can, you know, whitelist it.
Yeah.
But if I'm busy, if I'm doing, you know, 10 different things and this message comes up and I miss it, it'll just go ahead and put the apps to sleep, you know, without me, unless I stop it from doing that.
But with Telegram, in your example, you know that might happen, so you could just tell it not to do that, I suppose.
So if I have the presence of mind to remember that I might want to, right, and go in and whitelist the app. So I've put I've put another screenshot in that shows where you can whitelist the app deep in settings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so I can do that, but you know, why do I have to? Why is the phone trying to make those decisions for me? Why can't you know, I make those decisions for myself? Mm-hmm. So you know, what's my conclusion? My conclusion is, I would very much like to see a kind of I know what I'm doing mode on my phone. You know, and this could apply for Apple users as well. You know, I don't know much about Apple, but maybe there's an equivalence there as well, where you can go in and you can say, I'm an experienced user. This is not even a developer thing. This is not about, you know, me being a developer. This is just me being somebody who's used phones for a couple of decades. I kind of know what I'm doing. Don't babysit me. Don't make the phone do things that I don't want it to do. Let me make all those decisions.
I wonder what percentage of people would throw the switch.
Yeah, interesting to speculate, right?
Mm.
You know, probably small, probably few, 5%, 1%, you know, who knows? But yeah, you know, that's what I would like. I just like something where that I can say, don't do any of that crazy stuff. Just let me operate my own phone because I kind of know what I want.
Anything automated. Yeah, go on, Ted.
That could live alongside the simple mode button, couldn't it?
Yeah. So it's that's a great point. It's the kind of opposite of the simple button. You know, simple mode, normal mode, experience mode, or something like that.
Yeah.
It can even be part of setup. You know, when you first get the device and you set it up as an option, I'm an advanced user.
Yeah. Anyway, end of rant. End of rant.
Before we move on to your next point, did you want to just talk about your Doze? I forgot disabled Doze app. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I know it's kind of geeky, but yeah, just a brief kind of overview.
Yeah, it is geeky. So there is going back to Doze mode. So if you read all those Reddit posts, people are saying, how can I turn this off? How can I turn off Doze mode? I don't want it. And you know, show me how to do it. And the answer is there's no easy way to do it. And it requires sending an ADB command, like a developer command, to the phone to disable that mode. And normally that involves connecting your phone up to a computer, sending the command from the computer to the phone to disable Doze.
Mm-hmm.
So actually somebody on my YouTube channel came up with they saw one of my apps and they came up with a suggestion as to how to do it just using a phone and not a computer. And it's a bit geeky. It involves running my app and running the settings app in split screen mode, running them at the same time and typing in some codes and things. But you can actually disable Doze just on your phone using this kind of hacky workaround. Yeah. But it's not easy, and it's not something that a norm op would do.
I was doing this with you yesterday, and you had to lead me by the hand, really. So
right.
Yeah, you couldn't expect as you say, norm ops.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, for anybody who really does want to experiment, I've written the app, I've published the app, and I've done a YouTube video that actually walks through the process. So you know, it is doable, but it's definitely not straightforward. And so that's where we are.
Malcolm, quickly, what's your YouTube channel?
It is, I guess, just put Malcolm Bryant into YouTube. I don't know how else to do it. Yeah,
yeah,
we'll link it.
It's your name, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, did I read also that it doesn't survive a boot? So every time you reboot the phone, you'd have to do the go through the process again. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not specific to my app. It's just specific to disabling, disabling Doze. Every time you do it, if you reboot, the system re-enables it. So it's only a temporary thing.
Because Google don't want you doing it.
Because exactly, Google absolutely don't want you doing it.
Right, okay then. And your last topic, Malcolm?
Yeah, so last thing really on launches, I guess. Launches and permissions. So I did a post a couple of weeks ago just talking about actually updating for 2025. I did a list of about, I think, a dozen of the most popular launches. And I looked at all of the Android permissions that they asked for, and in particular the so-called dangerous permissions, which are ones where they access personal information and so on. And at one end of the scale, there's Microsoft Launcher that, believe it or not, asked for 73 different permissions, of which 14 are dangerous. And so that's at the kind of, you know, off the scale end of the charts. And at the other end, there are launches like Octopi, which asked for just a handful of permissions and I think none of them were dangerous, if I remember rightly. Yeah. And so my premise was, if you think about what a launcher is, you know, we all Android users love to experiment with different launchers. But if you think about what a launcher essentially is, it's just an app to open other apps. Right. It's the sole purpose of a launcher is an app that opens other apps on your device.
Mm-hmm.
And so my premise is that a launcher shouldn't need to access your personal information to do that. And so, you know, it kind of grates with me that, I mean, Microsoft, I'm sure, very trustworthy. They're not going to scam anybody. But the fact that they're asking for access to everything on my phone, all these permissions, when they really don't need to, And you know that they're just doing that to monetize the hell out of, you know, my data and everybody else's data who uses that launcher.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think I don't want to give them that information. You know, I'd sooner use a launcher that doesn't do that. So I guess it was just mm-hmm. a bit of a awareness raising, really, in terms of, you know, why do we put up with launchers and with other apps that ask for all these permissions that they don't really need to do their job.
And so you created Basic Launcher.
Well, I did. I mean, almost as a proof of concept. So you know, I use it myself. It is fairly basic, so I wouldn't necessarily advocate that everybody goes out and uses it. It won't suit some people. But as a proof of concept, it launches other apps and it uses no permissions whatsoever. And I actually enjoy, maybe I would say this because I developed it, but I actually enjoy using it. I think it's a pretty okay launcher. And it does that without using any permissions. So, you know, Microsoft launcher using 73 permissions. I mean, what's that all about, really?
And yeah. Samsung is probably almost as bad. The thing is, though, that a launcher, they will argue, is not just a thing that you used for launching other apps. It's become a thing of its own. You know, if you look at One UI and how all the widgets and the stacking widgets and the way in which everything interacts with wallpapers and live this and live that and dynamic islands and all the rest of it, they'll be arguing that the launcher is no longer just a thing that launches apps.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, I get that I need to give all my information to Google. You know, that's the kind of, you know, I think we all accept that if we use Android. I get that if I use a Samsung phone, then I'm going to give Samsung all kinds of permissions to access stuff on my, you know, that's part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I guess personally, I don't feel the need to give all of that information as well to a third party, like Microsoft or Nova or whatever. I just, you know, it's not for me. So, you know, I just thought I'd throw it out there for people to comment on.
Yeah, fair enough. I must admit that I kind of trust developers, especially you, of course, but I tend to trust developers to not abuse my data and kind of nothing's gone wrong so far. I've got an example. My SMS backup and restore app, it's got total access to my data on Google Drive. Now, the reason that came about was because I had it restricted to only necessary ones because my backup folder is held on Google Drive. But there were some glitches with it. I got in touch with the developer and spoke to him, and he suggested that he's not sure what was wrong with it, but if I put it onto full access, it should work perfectly. And sure enough, it did. And I haven't gone back to be honest, I haven't gone back to see if that now is fixed, and it might be now fixed. But the point I'm making is that for almost decades, that application has had full access to everything that I've got on Google Drive. And that's quite a lot of stuff. And I've never come unstuck. So I think that sometimes you've got to look at reviews and look at bad press for bad apps and kind of get a feel for developers, the ones that respond to you, like this one, for example, and make a decision for yourself. And going back to what you were saying, Mark, you know, that you make a choice about what you want a launcher to be for you, don't you? Maybe I'm just very naive and a bit of a dipstick. I don't know. Joe, am I a bit of a dipstick?
Well, I am definitely a dipstick myself, so you're not a dipstick on your own. I literally allow permissions willy-nilly on every app with the assumption that it needs it. I don't even look at it. Sometimes I just go, yep, allow. And it does give me pause for thought and actually make me think I should go back and look through the permissions on my apps, actually, because they're probably doing things they don't need to, perhaps. But like you say, I do trust everything I get through the Google Play Store. So that's part of it, really.
Yeah, just food for thought, anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to get some reaction from the group, the MeWe group, from the other members about that and what they think about it. So do feedback and let us have your thoughts on that and we'll come back. Thank you, Malcolm. Do stick around and we're going to go through some news and some new devices and stuff. So do chip in as we go. And the first section is about news. And one item really is that on September the 4th, which is on Monday, 1, 2, 3, 4, Thursday, there's going to be another Galaxy event. And the interesting bit for phone users, for PSC, apart from all the other tablets and stuff and computers and whatever else, is the S25 FE. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the comparison with the S24 FE, but it's not hugely different, to be honest. See, I was comparing it with the S25 Plus and the S24 Plus because they are similarly sized. One thing that the FE's devices has happened to them is that they've gone up in size. They used to be kind of 6.4 back in the S23 FE days, and now they're right up with the kind of 6.7 inch devices. There is a silicon carbon battery thingy been added, which is going to make the battery better, and also 45 watt charging by wire as well, and 25 watt wireless charging. So there's a couple of improvements in terms of the power, and they've also added an ultrasonic fingerprint scanner under glass, which is new from last year as well. Thoughts, anyone?
They've made it a bit lighter as well, I think probably because of that silicon carbon battery. It's 23 grams lighter, which is nice. So it wouldn't be so wieldy. I've never been an FE user though, but I know quite a few of the MeWe guys in the community do.
7 Android updates. Malcolm, you're a Samsung user, aren't you?
Yeah, but like Joe, I've not used the FE. I'm interested about the silicon carbon battery. I hadn't picked up on that. I didn't think that Samsung were going for that yet, because of the whole Note 7 debacle. They were being very cautious about adopting new battery technology. So I hadn't picked up on that. I'll go and read up on it.
I think everyone's going the same way, aren't they? They're all... Eventually, everyone's going to be doing it, I reckon. It used to be a kind of big risky thing from the Chinese manufacturers, but anyway, talking of new phones, we've got the incidentally, all of that stuff about the S25 FE is kind of leaked. It's not confirmed until Thursday when the thing has been properly announced. But what we do know is about the Pixel 10 range, don't we, Joe? And I don't know if you want to lead us through the changes there. There's a Pixel Watch 4, which we'll come to with Malcolm in a minute, specifically because of his interest. But what about the other ones?
See, just quickly, if you're going to go for a Pixel 10, I think you should go for a Pixel 9 Pro. It's a better buy, in my opinion. But anyway, that aside, we've got the Pixel 10, Pixel 10 Pro, a Pixel 10 Pro XL. They're already launched now. You've got the Pixel Pro 10 Pro Fold. It's a nice mouthful. That's being released later. I've gone off Pixels a little bit, but I am thinking of getting a Pro. I'm going to switch up my S25 Ultra for one to have a little play, because they are offering Google AI Pro for free for a year. So that kind of appeals to me.
Right. Okay. And
you're saying, Joe, that the Pixel 9 Pro is a better buy just on the basis of value for money or
yeah, because if you look at the, I think, if they're actually slightly cheaper at the moment than the actual standard Pixel 10. Me, it's a much better buy. I mean, it has added an extra lens, but is it a great lens on that Pixel 10? I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The Pixel 10, is the base model has got a 5x zoom now, hasn't it?
Yeah, but... I think the sensor size is rather small on that. I'm going to quickly go on the Google store now and have a look at what the costings are. So I'm pretty sure the Pro is cheaper than the Pixel 10. And then for me, it's a no-brainer.
We'll come back to you in a second.
Yeah, I'll have a quick look.
Let's talk about the Pixel Watch 4, shall we, Malcolm? We both got a Pixel Watch 3 here, and I've been wowing lately about how amazing the battery is. It's just stunningly good. I have it on 100% brightness. It's on all the time, the always on display. Notifications come straight through, barring what we said earlier. It's hooked up to the Pixel 9. Now, admittedly, I'm not down the gym all the time. I'm just living in a kind of sedentary lifestyle almost, but it's like 3 days of battery. I took it off the charger today as an example at 8 o'clock this morning, and at 1 o'clock it still showed 100%. It's just amazing. So I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but also perhaps the Pixel Watch 4 and the changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good device, the Pixel Watch 3, and I have the 41 millimeter version, so the smaller one. And mine's the LTE model, as I quite often go out without my phone, but still want to be contactable. And for me, the battery lasts a full day, but not more than that. But that's all right, because I charged the watch overnight alongside my phone, and so that's fine. If I go out walking or running and I'm using the GPS and I'm listening to podcasts or music, that does hammer the battery a bit, but then I just top up while I'm having a shower and I'm good to go. So pretty happy with Pixel Watch 3, and I much prefer the wired charging to wireless charging, because it's considerably faster and the watch doesn't get so hot. So all the Pixels have wired charging, whereas the Samsungs, which I guess are the main competitors, they're all wireless charging, and I think wired is preferable.
They're wired because they've got those four prongs in the thingy that stick into it, yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
And actually, that was present on the Pixel Watch 2 and 3, and those four prongs, two of them are for charging, and two are for data.
Right.
And so for me personally, I mean, I'm an edge case, but I'm constantly, when I'm developing and testing watch apps, I'm constantly moving stuff between my PC and my watch. And I just plonk the watch down onto the park and it immediately connects to my PC.
Right.
Which is great. And I must do that 20 times a day when I'm developing apps. So I'm doing it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Pixel Watch 4, that data connection is no longer possible because the new charging connector has only got two pins, not four.
Right.
And it's just for charging. So I'm going to miss that functionality, actually. It's a bit of a downgrade for me in that respect.
Mm. But they put it on its side as well.
They put it on its side, which reminds me of the very first Wear OS watch I ever had, which was the Moto 360. Where you put it on a little park sideways, and it would double as a kind of bedside clock.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like that, and I think in other respects the Pixel Watch 4 looks like a good upgrade. So you know, the battery can be accessed by undoing a couple of screws, and that's definitely good. And the GPS has been improved. The display is brighter. And the bezels have been reduced, so there's more screen real estate. And I always felt that the Pixel Watch 3 was a bit overpriced relative to the competition, although I bought one anyway. But at least the Pixel Watch 4 is won't be any more expensive than its predecessor. They're basically putting it out for the same price.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have to say that I do find it a bit irksome that Google charges an extra £100 to have an LTE watch when Samsung only charges £50 extra.
Mm, mm.
So it feels like they're kind of
cheeky.
Yeah, it's a bit cheeky.
But, I think the LTE thing must be the battery difference, though, or part of it between our experiences, because that's definitely going to be using more battery and a very different, you know, your one day to my three, even given that you go out running, is quite marked, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Do either of you sleep track at all?
I don't. Mm. I don't. But my watch does get hammered. I mean, I'm because I'm, you know, developing on it. You know, it's getting hammered all the time. So it's if mm-hmm. I can get a day out of it, then I'm happy. But interestingly enough, I went into the Google website and went to purchase a PW4 just to see how much it was, and I put in that I had a Pixel Watch 3 LTE model, and that watch cost me £450 a year ago, which I felt was exorbitant, but I paid it. Mm. And the value that Google will give me to part exchange my Pixel Watch 3 against the Pixel Watch 4, wait for it, £450 is £84.
It's crazy, isn't it? How much Google products devalue over time, short space of time.
Yeah, so if I want to sell it, I'll put it on the classified. But now I've told everybody on the podcast that I hammer my watch. No, nobody will want to buy it from me anyway, so it's a moot point. Mm. You know, in terms of the Pixel 10 range, but you know, for what it's worth, there's nothing there that's got me super excited. Same as Joe, really.
There's a few features that I think are good, like the best take being automatic's quite nice. Lifestyle feature, and the Pixel Snap looks like it'll be quite good. I've seen quite a few people using Apple products on the back of Pixels, and it works fine, so that's quite good. Hopefully we get more products come out now from third parties, but yeah, hardware wise it doesn't excite me much.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think that reaction's pretty typical of what, you know, a lot of reviewers have said. You know, a few things, but nothing that really steals the show. I did just put in the show notes that what caught my eye was that the Pixel 10 apparently has 3.5 gigabytes of the available RAM permanently set aside for running AI. Mm,
yeah.
Which is interesting. So if you think about what a huge memory hog AI is, when you're talking to Gemini, it's using a huge amount of resources, and of course you want it to be instantaneous. Otherwise, you know, if you have to wait for responses, it gets really frustrating really quickly. So they're reserving that 3.5 gigabytes of RAM solely for Gemini and other AI stuff, whether you like it or not. And so if you're actually one of the people who says, you know, I don't really care for using all this newfangled, you know, Gemini stuff, I can take it or leave it, I'd sooner have that 3.5 gig back for other things. Mm. out of the box, you don't get that. But after I put this in the show notes, I saw in MeWe forums that Scott Weddington has linked to an article that shows you can actually go in and disable AI Core, the AI Core system app, and that gets your 3.5 gigabytes back. But I guess it's just quite interesting that you know, the way everything is going AI with our devices, the RAM is going up and up and up in order to accommodate that. But actually, they're starting to earmark that RAM solely for that purpose. So, you know, kind of interesting the way it's going.
Mm-hmm. They probably market phones with two RAM values now, one for AI and one for the rest of the device.
Yeah.
So if you turn it off, like Scott is saying, you've got to accept that your AI stuff just won't work. Is that right?
I don't know if it won't work or if it just loads up everything from disk, and so it's slow.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the latter. I think it still works, but it just loads it all up from, so you have to wait for it.
Okay.
And the other thing that has, you know, fairly newsworthy, I think, about the Pixel 10 was the move to eSIM only in the US. Mm. You know, similar to Apple, and that doesn't affect anybody outside the US, but it's an indication of maybe the way things are heading, and people have mixed feelings about that, right?
Yeah, my take is that everyone like us, and me particularly, who changes phones every 12 and a half minutes, it's going to be a complete pain in the ass. But everyone not in the tech world will nonchalantly shrug about it. They probably won't even know. And they'll think, oh, yeah, that's great. 2 years down the road. I think you were saying on your show last night about this, weren't you, Joe?
Yeah.
You know, the normobs are not going to notice. And if they do notice, they'll think, yeah, it's great. As they're 3 years down the road with the same phone.
It's not a problem for them, is it, really? Like, because they just stick with the same phone, which is why I think everyone will follow suit, which is a worry. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's driven by the networks in the US, or do you think it's the OEMs themselves, or perhaps a collaboration between them both? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, what I heard was that it's to do with millimeter wave in the US. Which is just exclusive to Verizon. So what Miriam Joar was saying in her podcast, which I listened to today, was saying that extra space that is saved by not having a physical SIM is being used for a millimeter wave aerial now. And that's part of the reason it's in the US only, because nobody outside the US cares about millimeter wave at all.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's true, then maybe it'll remain a US only thing because that's just Verizon and nobody else. But I kind of think it's a trend anyway that is going to get adopted more widely. That's my guess, but who knows?
I don't mind, as long as every 12 and a half minutes I can easily, readily, quickly swap it.
In theory, that's how it's supposed to be, but it doesn't really transpire like that, does it?
Anyway, there you go. OnePlus 15 has broken cover, not 14, because that's unlucky or something. And the 15 looks as though I've been handling my OnePlus 12R again recently, and I kind of like it, and I'm quite enthusiastic about the OnePlus 15. Snapdragon 8 Elite 2, apparently 16 gigs of RAM, which is the same as what I've got on this one here. Android 16 out of the box. What else have we got? Oxygen OS 16, so not color yet, although it's very color flavored Oxygen. It looks nice. Joe, you agree with me on the OnePlus, don't you?
I absolutely love OnePlus devices. I had the 12. I kind of wanted to get the 13, but I just haven't got the money. But yeah, I really do like. I'm going to try and build a relationship with them, actually, because one of my friends is like an ambassador role, and he does a lot in their community. So I'm going to see what he can do for me.
Okay. There's a £99 Samsung Galaxy phone that's being released. It's not a top end phone, obviously, but the interesting point about it is that they're offering 6 OS updates on it. So hopefully, the likes of Motorola and Co are looking at that and scratching their heads. This is the A06. And it's far from anything like even mid tier, but the point is that 6 OS updates, which is great.
Yeah. I do wonder if the hardware will keep up with that 6 years, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's always the question, isn't it? Because it's low-end hardware to begin with. TCL Next Paper 6, the Ultra, has been listed eventually ahead of IFA. IFA is starting on Friday, incidentally. And the TCL 50 Pro that I've got here is not a 7.2-inch display. And they've really upped the size of the display. This new one's almost tablet kind of size. So that'll be interesting for people that want to remember the Nexus 7 days, which would be great. And lastly, and probably most interestingly for me, is the, and you, Joe,
yeah,
is
definitely.
That the Motorola Edge 60 Neo has at last been announced. They're doing what Sony do with the 5 series on this, is that the the Neo version tends to get announced later in the year. And no details about it at all, but it's really encouraging to see that it's coming. If I had a pick list for changes, I would say, even though it was my phone of the year for last year, I would say slightly faster chipset, and a side-mounted fingerprint scanner, because I do think the fingerprint scanner under the glass is not that great over time. But I would want it to stay the same dinky size. Any thoughts, anyone?
I'm hoping it goes on the motorway rotation so I can get a play.
Yep, it's a good one. Malcolm, not a Motorola fan?
I've not really played with Motorola. I mean, I've heard you enthuse about them, and I'm kind of tempted to get one just to have a play, but I just haven't really got around to it.
Fair enough. Okay, Joe, what are we talking about with your stuff that you've been up to recently? Let's get all the show down. Obviously, you went to the launch of the Honor, so the V5, the Magic V5. Yeah. Do you want to start with that one?
Yeah, I can do. It was at a swanky hotel, so that was really, really quite nice. Hey. The keynote wasn't too long as well, which was quite nice. There was a conscious effort for it to move on quite quickly, because they had a load of stuff set up for us to play with afterwards. There was a panel at the end which was a bit different. It was hosted by Spencer Kelly, who presents the BBC Click.
Oh yeah.
You had Tom, the tech chap, was one of the chaps on the in the panel. And actually, one of the guys on there actually used the V3, and he uses the V5 now in his business. And he actually created an app using AI, which is quite interesting. But they was talking about different use cases with the phone, really. But was all itching to play with them, really. So eventually it ended, and we got to play with a load of stuff, which I will put videos out eventually.
And they gave you one?
Yeah, so on the Friday afterwards, I was given one, and my sim's just gone in it today. I've done an unboxing on my channel, which we'll put a link to it if anyone wants to see unboxing of it. They're not the most exciting unboxing, but mine's quite fun, I think. Or I tried to make it fun. But yeah, it's a really solid device, I think. This is the device I've been most excited for since I let the V3 go.
Very jealous, Joe. Very jealous.
Yeah, we'll have to meet up and you can have a play.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Some people are saying that the changes between the V3 and the V5 are not that huge, though.
No, well, I don't need big changes, though, because the V3 was very good. You have got a bigger battery on there, and it's the silicon carbon, which we mentioned earlier, because it's 5,820 milliamp battery with a silicon carbon. Now, Honor quoted that it would have 9 hours more battery than the Fold 7, which was a massive claim. So, yeah, it'd have to be interesting to see how that goes. The telephoto's improved as well. So the camera bump is a bit bigger. The inner screen is slightly bigger as well, at 7.95-inch OLED. I think they've changed the materials in the inner display as well, because they was talking about loads of different aero space materials they've used. That's not the right terminology, but yeah, there's a lot of talk about the materials, because they actually won a Guinness Book of World Record for a foldable holding a weight suspended, which was quite interesting. Yeah, because they're shouting about the strength of the hinge, which was quite cool. It's got 250 megapixel ultra wide and a wide, as well as that 64 megapixel telephoto. Both panels have 120 hertz refresh rate, 5000 nits peak brightness. Of course, it's got the 8 Elite by Snapdragon chipset. You can get up to 1 terabyte of storage if you want. I think 512 is standard, though. 16 gig of RAM. I'm guessing a lot of that goes towards Gemini, though, because they did talk about Gemini quite a bit as well. Because they do have quite a good relationship with Google, I believe. Yeah. Now, the price, this is the juicy bit, is $1,699.99. But there is some really good deals on the launch. Actually, I forgot to talk about charging quickly. A 66-watt charger.
Yeah.
Charging, yeah. 15-watt wireless, I think it is. No, 50-watt, sorry. 50.
Yeah, 50-watt. Brilliant.
Yeah. And it is slightly thinner, 8.8 millimeters thick, but I think that's the white version. I think the black and dawn gold are very slightly thicker, and the weight is 217 grams. So yeah, it's very light, very, very light.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the price, you can get up to £300 off direct with Honor at the moment, and you can get the Honor Magic Pen, the 66 watt plug, and you get 12 months of both inner and outer display protection, where you can get a one-off fix. So there's quite a lot of freebies there, and it makes it really good value. The networks are all doing gifts with purchase as well. They're slightly different. You can get the Honor Earbuds Open, which are really good. I've got a pair of them. The Magic Pen, Fitness Watch 2, and a wireless charging stand. So yeah, some really good deals out there at the moment it.
Do you think they priced it deliberately to undercut the Fold 7? Because it comes in underneath that, doesn't it?
Yeah, there was grumbles that it was a bit too close. But when you look at the value proposition with the specs side by side, yeah, I think it is much better value. And I think they've done that on purpose, definitely. I didn't mention the IP rating as well, actually, because it's got a better IP rating than the Fold 7. It's 58 and 59 IP rating.
They've knocked it out of the park, really, haven't they? This is amazing. Yeah. The camera lump's a bit kind of unwieldy, but it's very slim. And apparently the pen works on the outside and the inside, doesn't it?
Yep.
And you don't need to switch the nibs like with the S Pen Pro, is that right?
Yep, works on both displays. And that works across the V3, V5, the V2, works across all of them.
I don't know if the Fold 7, did they get the S Pen working on the outside screen on that one? I don't think they did they?
No, I don't think there's any pen input on that one, as far as I know.
Oh, no, none at all? Oh, okay.
As far as I know. I might be wrong, though.
No, I think you're right. I think they removed the digitizer layer. They said to achieve the thinness, they removed that digitizer layer. But of course, the Honor Magic V5 is equally thin and does have the layer. So,
right.
Yeah, that's a tagline: thinner without the compromise.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, it looks really impressive, and I think that they have, you know, they've moved this whole thing forward, haven't they?
Yeah.
And it's one to keep up with. Do you think that the camera lump is very too unwieldy?
No, because you do get a nice case in the box, and I think most people will case the backside of it, even if they don't use the free case. And then once you do that, you don't really notice, to be honest. So the free case has a nice kickstand as well, which
I saw that. That's very clever, isn't it? Yeah, good stuff. Right, okay then. Well, we'll look forward to you kind of reviewing that and doing a bit more in depth on it in due course. What else have you been using or doing?
So, yeah, now I'm a motivator like you, Ted. I've had the Moto Edge 60 Pro in dazzling blue.
Yeah.
It's a really nice device. I love the colour and the finish on the back. You do also get a free case in the box with that one. The case is colour matched, and it's a hard plastic. But the sides are open, which it does look nice showing off the curves of the screen, but not really that practical, if you ask me. And going on the curved screen, it's nice, but I prefer a flat display myself because of accidental touches. I have done a few, which is a bit frustrating, but it is lovely. It's very, very light, very light. Mm-hmm. I can tell the SoC isn't top end because I do get a few glitches and stutters here and there. Most people probably wouldn't notice it, though. I think it's just where I change device quite a lot, I notice it.
Yeah.
The camera system is really good for the price point, I think, in good light. Because I made a video I went out with family to Drusilla's Park, which is like a little family place with a zoo and rides and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I used that as my sole camera for the trip. And the 10X telephoto, considering it's got quite a small sensor, did really well. I was actually really impressed with it. It's only a 10 megapixel 3X optical. But up to about 10x, it was pretty clean images. The sensor's 1 over 3.94, which is quite a big, small sensor.
Yeah.
But yeah, that video's on my channel, if anyone wants to see that. Shameless plug there.
Mm-hmm.
I did find a glitch with the camera, though. When on a telephone and you go close to a subject, it automatically switches to the main lens. And at one point I had it flicking back and forth. It just went crazy. I don't know if it's the minimum focus distance or the phone tells you to use the main lens. I don't know, but it was very strange. Mm-hmm. And frustrating. Another annoyance for me is the different focal lengths. It's a small thing, but on the telephoto, they're all listed as 7.06 millimeters, no matter what focal length you use. So that's why my video, it doesn't tell you what X it's at, because I couldn't tell and I couldn't remember. Yes. I think Moto needs to have their own dedicated gallery app. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Ted.
Do you know when I look at these gallery apps on other phones, like for example the Honor, I think to myself, do we really need something other than Google Photos? Now those fancy tricks that you can do with the Honor and on Samsung, you've got to you can only get to them inside their own gallery app, and so. Fair enough, I suppose. They've developed it separately from Google Photos and, you more functionality. But it just feels a bit like kind of doubling up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think with the gallery app, it's, I don't know, I've always liked a local one as well as, maybe I'm weird. Well, I am definitely weird, no doubt.
It's old-fashioned, I suppose. I can't remember. Malcolm, thoughts?
Well, I think in terms of the dedicated gallery app, the problem is with, for example, having Google Photos as the gallery app, the onboard gallery app, is that Google Photos on a Pixel is a system app. It has system privileges. And so on Samsung, Samsung Gallery has system privileges, but Google Photos is a third party app. And so there are certain things it can't do on other phones that it can do on a Pixel, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So in other words, the reason why manufacturers like to have their own gallery apps is so that they can make them system apps and they can enable them to do things that a third party app can't do.
Right. Yeah.
Extra features and so on. So, yeah. So that's the reason.
Like that on a. image to video thing, which is really clever.
Yeah.
But apparently that's a Google tool anyway.
It is, yeah.
There you go. Apparently, annoyingly for me, is that the Edge 60 Pro version, which was released in India, has got an LTPO screen, and it comes with the full on, always on display of the Razer and the Edge 50 Neo, which is just great. And the version that they released in the UK, presumably the same as the one you've got in your hand or had in your hand, it is not an LTPO, so you don't get that lovely always on display. That would have pushed me over the edge, to buy one if it had that on it. But I'm not going to without that. It's very important to me. I guess you got the UK one, did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I do hate when they companies launch different devices, different specs in different countries. It really frustrates me. It should be the same everywhere.
Very, very annoying. But you like the device overall?
Yeah, I really do. Yeah, I think for its price point, it's an amazing device. Really is. I think Moto have really nailed it. I think it's suitable for most people. I would say I prefer the 400 Pro slightly, but that is £100 more. Mm. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you certainly get some different functionality with that, but Moto provide a clean. So your Honor 400's gone back, is it?
Yeah, that was part of the deal of getting the V5. I had to give the 400 back,
right?
Which was frustrating because I did like that. I had my second SIM in there, and I actually accidentally gave them it back with my second SIM in. Lucky I can do a SIM swap very easily.
Very good. Your SIM is in what now then?
So it's in the V5, but it did very briefly, after my holiday, go back into the Magic 7 Pro, which I do love. I think it's a great phone. It does feel very hefty after being in the Moto, though, and the 400 Pro, because they're much lighter. But I do love it. The face unlock is brilliant. Now, iPhone users will appreciate this. You can use it in the dark. It's really secure for your banking apps. But even besides that, the fingerprint scanner is fantastic as well. One of the best I've used.
And the speakers are great too.
Yeah, very good speakers.
There's very little not to like. And my early verdict, when we've got more time, I'll come back and do a bit of a drill down on the Honor 4. But my early verdict really is that it feels like a powerhouse. And currently you can buy it for 550 quid in the UK, brand new, 512 gig, 12 gig of RAM. And it just feels like a powerhouse. It's slightly, I mean, you've got to get used to the software layer over the top of Android. I did try it with Octopi Launcher, but I was trying also to use their own and get used to it. There are some real quirks going on in there, which I won't dig into here, but, you know, we'll come back to my deeper dive on the Honor 400 Pro. Hopefully you can remember at the time with your stuff as well, and we'll go through that a bit more. I've had also, talking of motivator, I had the G86 in, so a quick mention for that. I compared it with the G85, which I reviewed the year before, and the bottom line is there's some nice improvements. They've made it square edge, so it looks like an iPhone, which is annoying. There's not a huge amount, but there's enough to make it an interesting upgrade. And I'll post a link to my full review in the show notes there, in the, so people can have a look at it. And that's about it for me, really. I have got an Apple iPhone 14 Pro Max in, believe it or not. I did think that it was about time I got an up-to-date iPhone for reference purposes. And I had the SE 2020 for some years now. I have to say that the iPhone 14 Pro Max, if I was prepared to live with the kind of Apple world way of doing stuff, I love the hardware. It's just great. And I shall certainly be coming back to it in future shows. It's got a proper always-on display. It's got a Face ID, which you were just talking about, in a roundabout way. The speakers, Steve always said that they were the best things he'd heard, and he's quite right. They are. They've got this octave shifting thing going on, which is working really, really well. When I'm tinkering with it, I just wish that I could bake myself into the Apple world, but I just don't want to, and so consequently, I'm stepping aside from it. But it's a huge upgrade from the SE 2020 for sure. Yeah, definitely. But lovely bit of hardware, really, really impressive. Okay, generally people said in the group that they would like us to keep doing photo of the week and photo of the month and all of that. So bowing to the peer pressure out there, I've continued to do that. I picked a photo of the week, and it's called Nighttime in the Bay, shot by Rohan Monagoda on his iPhone 15 Pro Max in Mallorca. And it's a shot, it's a beautifully composed shot, I think, across the darkened beach at night, with all the lovely lights shining from the buildings around the bay. In the and what makes it special is in the foreground, there's a huge dinghy, a white rubber dinghy, and it just makes the composition. It tells a story about what's gone on there, what's going on there, and the sky is all blue into black, and it just, I think that the composition works, the lighting works, the reflections work, and it's a really, really nice photograph. Any thoughts on that, Malcolm?
I'm looking at it now. I think it's a terrific photo, and as you say, it's the colours, everything is really crisp, despite the fact that it's taken at night. I think the dinghy in the foreground, as you said, is a nice feature, and it's just a super, super photo.
Joe?
Yeah, it's a wonderful photo. I like the way the dinghy's like almost lit up like a spotlight on it as well. And it actually looks like a night image, because we know how phones like to brighten them up, so I do like that element of it as well.
It's a lovely picture. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Rohan. Keep them coming. PSC Photos is where you'll find all that stuff going on. We'll be back with something else next time on the next show. And lastly, before we go, we're going to go to the classifieds. Oh, no, we're not. We're going to talk very briefly about one of the features that I found in the Honor 400 Pro, which was, what's it called?
Outpainting.
Outpainting. And I didn't know it had this. Now, Chris Kelly posted a picture of his son, which we won't put out publicly, but we can all see it here. And it clipped off the back of his cap, just very slightly clipped off the back of his cap. It's a portrait photograph. And so I gave it to Outpainting in the Honor phone and said to it, do some outpainting. Let's see you then. And sure enough, it did. And it I think it's done it brilliantly well. Chris had a go at doing the same thing in Snapseed. I think it's called Expanded in Snapseed. And I think that they didn't quite get the, that's on the right hand side there. I don't think they got the space behind the cap right, whereas the Honor did. It's made the space behind the cap really good. Outpainting. Have you had a go with that, Joe?
Yeah, I love Outpainting. I think it's a really good tool, on there. And every time I've used it, it's been quite impressive. The results, I've rarely seen a real mess up, really. There is the odd few that it does, but it not generally does a very good job.
I think the middle one has done it better, and that's the Honor one. I do think they made a better job than the Snapseed one, but it's good that they can all do that. Agree, Malcolm, or disagree?
Yeah, no, very impressive. Really, really impressive.
But in your picture, what wasn't there? Let's go to classifieds, and you can find all this on the PSC classifieds group. If you want to join our classifieds, you'll need to email me and talk to me about it, because we don't just let anyone in. We try to protect the membership there a bit, and it's a private group. So this, we thought in the new look PSC, we would do it slightly differently. We'd ask the guests to pick something from what's on sale at the moment, and then Joe also will pick something and I'll pick something. And so we'll have three picks for each show, hopefully. So Joe, what have you picked?
So the Fold 7s are very tempting, because I'd like to compare them to the V5, but I think I'd have to go with Chris Bates's Magic 7 Pro at £530. That's a lot of phone for your money.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very nice indeed. £530. I'm going to go for David Botfield's Oppo Find X8 Pro. In fact, it might be my old one that I sold. It might be doing the rounds. £590, 512 gigabytes in black. And that's a really nice phone. I did a review of that, and it's on my blog if anyone wants to look at it. And it's a smashing phone. It really is.
That's essentially a beefed up OnePlus 13, basically.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Coming out of the BBK group. Mm. So, have a look at that one, everyone. Malcolm.
So there are two Fold 7s with 512 gigabytes on offer, both in excellent condition and at a good price. One's from Andrew Martin in black at 107.5, which is a good price. And one from Phil Dawson in blue at 1100 with some cases thrown in. Which is also a good price. I am very tempted. And if it was someone else's money, I would jump straight in and I would have both of them.
Yeah, definitely.
That blue is wonderful, actually. It's a really nice colour.
I do agree. The Fold 7, I was using my Fold 5 today and thinking to myself, I actually don't want to use this anymore. It's not nice to use. It's too thin on the outside screen. I just don't like it anymore. But the Fold 7, I think, is much better. So, yeah. Good picks, gentlemen. Thanks ever so much for joining us today on our New Look show, Malcolm. It's been great to have you on. I guess your main plug is going to be freepoc.org, is it?
Freepoc.org. You guys can find me, as I said at the top of the show, in MeWe. I hang out there pretty regularly, so do get in touch if you would like to. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Onwards and upwards, you guys have got off to a great start, and it's going to be great.
You've made it special, Joe.
Yeah, I'll second that. Been an excellent guest, Malcolm.
Thank you.
So we'll be back in a fortnight's time, unless we've got enough stuff to sneak one in the middle there. But we'll see how we go. If you want to guest on the show, as I say, give us a shout and let us know, and we'll build up our little guest list. We'll hopefully catch up with you again in a fortnight's time. And one last thing to say is goodbye to Steve once again. Thank you, Steve, for all you did for PSC, and you'll be hugely missed.